This episode, we're going to cover the 303 and the 617. That's right, Colorado and Boston. Why two episodes? Because between the two, we couldn't find five worthy starting pitchers. That's right, it's time for Dingers.
This is Dingers, way more than fantasy baseball. We keep it real when we talk and knock it straight out the park. Let's see the stats. What's the average draft position? What kind of plays you making? Check the wins above replacement. Check the lineups and the points. This I gotta see. What's your path to victory? Are they aiming for a dynasty? Get points going head to head. Please don't do me no favors. We're always watching waivers. Ain't no minor league. This is major. Yeah, Dingers. Let's go.
Welcome to Dingers, the only fantasy baseball podcast for smart people. It's not just Colton Welker that wins you championships. That's why week in and week out, we're delivering tips and strategies to help you live that straight up OG lifestyle. Tyler Childs joined again from the murder room. Robbie Baseball, what's happening, Robbie?
Nothing. I was just looking at my heavy liquors, hard liquors, that's what they're called, and seeing if there was anything I wanted to pair with my milk that I'm drinking, and nothing's fitting. I don't think Jaeger and milk will go well tonight, nor will some tequila or ouzo. So
I really hope that at Robbie Baseball on Twitter gets hit hard for heavy liquor. Like, oh, please call him out on that, ladies and gentlemen.
And the only episode that I think I did drink heavy liquor, hard liquor, was the aired, unreleased, whatever. SP Streamer episode from nearing a year ago now. God, that was such a long time ago.
We were so young back then.
Yeah, geez, hopeful. We were in a new world.
Bright-eyed, isn't that the words they use?
Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. I was going to lead it to who we were talking about. Bushy face.
We've been locked inside for a year. Naturally, we're bushy face. Like that's a byproduct. So,
but tonight we're covering two teams, and we're going to get into it just like we have been with single episodes. But now we know, the crunch is on, and we need to ensure. Sorry, my computer's trying to tell me to do something smart. Restart to install latest Windows. No, not now. Leave me alone. Anyway, so we're going to cover two teams. We're going to go a little quicker and ensure we get all 30 for everybody so that early on in your season, you know what reasonable expectations are. So without further ado, we should probably drink.
A long time ago, someone decided to put stuff in glass bottles. In some of these bottles, they put juice or milk, and that was stupid. Today, only alcohol and a few other products remain in the containers from the gods. It's time for beers and bourbon, because good advice only comes in a bottle.
Oh. How you doing?
That's just like a dinger. When they say, the sound coming off his bat is different. The sound from that pop was different. What do you got tonight, Ty?
Give you a hint. It's my version of Waterloo Dark. He's Basil Hayden, we're right on it. And I Robbie, I'm super jacked up for this weekend. We have our home league draft.
Very exciting. By the time this airs, it'll be over. And
by the time it airs, hopefully you'll be able to Waterloo Dark.
Hopefully. I don't see any more. Well, I do still have some kicking around, but I don't see any more unopened 12 packs. So yeah. It should be good. And I'll be sitting down here for our draft.
Absolutely.
Sleeping bag on the floor.
And I will probably be sending some tweets your way during it. So make sure you tag along with Robbie Baseball on Twitter. Or
that would be fun if we live tweeted the home draft. We were talking about maybe doing something on the Clubhouse app, but this isn't the structure for that one, as you had mentioned.
Too much slurring and yelling in that draft for...
Right, yeah. And over a Zoom, it would be just inappropriate. It would be Mitch, inappropriate.
Yeah, and we actually have a Mitch. We have a Mitch. And he's probably the one to be inappropriate also. So
yeah, so that league prep will be good. But the league prep the team prep that we've got to do or had to do for these two teams tonight is not good. So Ty, I'll go first. Colorado, sorry if you were on Boston, but we'll hit up the Rockies because I feel like they've got the most intriguing conversation that we get to have tonight, but also the fewest outside of this first one. So I'm going to assume we're leading off with Raimel Tapia. We've then got Ryan McMahon taking second base. I'm aware, everybody. I know there's a Garrett Hampson. Then we've got Trevor Story at shortstop until he's traded. Charlie Blackman in right field. CJ Cron, who according to everyone is going to have a career season. I want to have that conversation shortly. That's at your five hole. Six is Sam Hilliard. Seven is Josh Fuentes, who's third base. And then catcher, you can take your pick, but we're going to say Elias Diaz is going to be the guy. And Dom Nunez as a backup. And then, as I already mentioned, Garrett Hampson's a possibility. Chris Owings, still kicking around, multi-position eligible dude. And Jonathan Daza, D-A-Z-A, sorry for mispronunciation. But that's the lineup as I see it. Ty, I know you said his name off the top, so you got a guy you want to discuss. So the outfield is the outfield. That's not really a conversation. You know, you could move him around in the order, I suppose, but Tapia's kind of the guy. They've got enough lefties here. What are you thinking is going on at third base?
Yeah, I mean, there's two arguments to be made here. I mean, obviously Josh Fuentes probably has the edge in a lot of people's eyes for our contract purposes, but apparently Colorado doesn't care about contracts. They pay contracts to be on other teams. They do a lot of things that other teams wouldn't do. Colton Welker is ready to play Major League Baseball at this point. Whether they do that on opening day or not, I think it's a short stop as the starter for Josh Fuentes. I think you're going to see Colton Welker after the deadline. And I think that's just how it's going to go. Now, I think there's an outside shot he can and should make the team. And the reason I think that is the option I would take is because I have a team with this Rockies roster that you're going to have to plug some holes because you're going to lose John Gray at the end of the season. There's a 0% chance he stays in Colorado. He's not had great success. Pitchers have no motivation to stay in Colorado. And I think you're going to probably trade one of, if not both, Trevor Story or Charlie Blackman this season. So with that said, you need guys to replace some of these guys. And if you want to go get free agents next offseason, which you got to assume they're going to want to do, whether it's to retain Story or bring somebody else in, you're going to need some guys to build around to do that. So you got to assume Welker has to be part of that story. So that's why I think they're going to push him to be a piece of the marketing. And I think it's a big reason why they were comfortable moving Arenado in the offseason.
One thing that aligns with your idea of having him start the year is way back when the Marlins moved to their new park and they signed Jose Reyes and they signed Mark Burley and Heath Bell and whomever else it was. They bought a team and then they sucked and they, you know, disappointed in year one in that park. After year one, they've made this huge blockbuster deal with the Jays. They sold Heath Bell, traded Heath Bell to San Diego or whatever. They wiped it clean. But what they did from the, which is not what Colorado has done, but Colorado did trade Nolan Arenado. They did not bring in anyone to replace him. And they have Ian Desmond opting out again. So the team has taken steps back. And as Ty has already alluded to, there are pending free agents. You know, the tide is turning in Colorado. But what Miami did was they brought up Jose Fernandez. And he was a rookie and he was a young, you know, guy to help to kind of bridge that gap. And I see that storyline that you're talking about, Ty. But I think the reality is 100% service manipulation at minimum. And depending on what goes on as far as like if players can get assigned to teams, Josh Fuentes will probably not have a disgusting stat line because of the home ballpark. And Colorado is a pretty even mix of home and away games to start the season. So it's probably going to be, you know, a minimum 260 type hitter and OPS north of 700. Things will be serviceable by a standard of Colorado. Now, what the Rockies might understand is that that position should have a 300 hitter with a 900 OPS. And if Welker could be that guy, maybe they don't care to send him to AAA when that starts. Maybe they will do it. But I can see at, you know, my hope is I'm wrong. I can see him ending up with the big league club and getting less than 200 at bats this year. No fault of his own, fault of the organization.
Yeah, well, let me throw this at you because I think it makes the conversation really interesting. Like, let's just pretend that this rotation, which we'll get to in a minute, has any resemblance of basically the same rotation from 2018. That's a good team. Exactly. And that's the point. So if that's the case, you want your best players. And I don't think you can realistically argue that 28-year-old Josh Fuentes is a more important piece to this team being successful than 23-year-old Colton Welker. And so even if you're in rebuild mode, the contract manipulation doesn't do a whole lot for you because you're wasting a couple of years of that contract before you're even going to be good. Right. So for me, Welker is more likely to be part of the things that get traded in order to build the next winning team in Colorado than it is likely that he's part of that core, because there's just not enough around him in the organization right now to build it. So I think you're smarter getting the clock started as opposed to leaving it. And there's arguments on both sides of that fence, but that's why I would push for it, because I think it's important. Now, I cannot justify Garrett Hampson on the bench. Like, I just can't. There's right. No reason that guy belongs on the bench. I cannot justify Sam Hilliard starting over Garrett Hampson. Just can't.
Yeah, I think Hampson can be a 550 at bat guy this year, but he's kind of one of the limbos to where does he settle? Because if there isn't one spot, like if there are no injuries to this team, then you have to go by performance. And Colorado, like I just said with Fuentes, has a way of being able to make players appear to be better than they are. It's one of the faults in Colorado players, especially when they leave. We saw it firsthand with Tulowitzki coming to us. But we've also, you know, we've seen it elsewhere. We've watched good pitchers go to Colorado and suck. We've watched Colorado pitchers leave and be better. But it happens within that ballpark, and the park makes players look better. So on that note, I wanted to ask you, I apologize, it's on the spot, but everybody's going to be excited for it, for a CJ Cron projection for this year. I'm going to give you mine first to give you a base level. Now, we are assuming Cron avoids injury, which has been an issue for him. We are assuming Cron does bat in between the 4 and 6 spot all year. So let's just put that there. The ideal Cron season, 550 at bat type season. I have seen his projections everywhere, and I don't get it based on his ADP, because it's been climbing since the moment he signed that deal. But I can't see him right now having less than 80 runs and 80 RBIs and 25 home runs. That's kind of where I see his base. Now, stolen bases, I'm just going to give him one because something's going to happen and he gets a stolen base. But the average for Cron will be 270. And what I have just said, to put things in context, Ty, I believe 3 of those 5 stats I just gave are career bests for Cron. So my projection, which I believe is lower than most, still gives CJ Cron his career year. Now, if you're ready.
Where did you have his batting average?
270. If you're ready.
Yep. I think.
Go ahead. Right. I'm going to get his stats up. To give us what his career season would be if we took the best of everything. So what are your Cron projections?
This one's tricky. So what I think we're going to see is about 260.
Oh no.
With 25 home runs and about 65 RBIs. Is what okay. I'm expecting.
How about runs?
Runs about 70. I think he's going to score more runs than people think. Because okay. I think he's going to have an interesting. And the reason I'm going this direction, and I didn't have enough time to prepare for this question, but
sorry,
that's okay. No, but the thing that I find interesting is the decrease in launch angle in 2019. Right. So
that was brief, though.
Agreed, but it was in a big ballpark, which he's also in again, right? And
okay.
And it definitely will be interesting given that there's half decent pitching in that division in the NL overall, like that's going to be there. So I also, like, for me, the discrepancy is massive because he doesn't have large numbers of at-bats against a lot of the guys that he's going to see. So this is where my concern is. Like, I almost dropped the bottom out on this because I think, given what I mentioned already about Colton Welker, there's also a very strong possibility that Josh Fuentes is the starting first baseman.
So that is, would be interesting if that happened.
Yeah, and it's not to say that Cron won't have at-bats. He'll still get some at-bats, but I don't think 550 is realistic for Cron.
I agree. I don't think it's realistic, but that seems to be what's happening. So his career high for at-bats is 501. So I had specifically said to you to assume 550,
mm-hmm.
because that way it's maxed out. And the reason why is because every projection is ridiculous for him. But his career best year for runs, the total was 68. That was in 18 with Tampa Bay. For RBIs, it was 78. That was in 19 with Minnesota in a stacked Minnesota lineup. Home runs, 30 is his career high. That was in 18 as well. Stolen bases are 3. So that's an irrelevant one either way. But the average, his best year in average was 16 with the Angels. He batted 278 in 400 ABs, roughly 400 ABs. But Colorado jumps average for players, and power hitters get a little bit less of it, but they still get the bump. And that's why I feel comfortable taking a career 260 hitter, career 257 hitter, and saying he'll hit 270. I think that's okay. Now your launch angle point is a good one for you going to 260. And then the dingers at 25, both of us picked it. I picked it because I don't think he's going to need them. He's going to be able to just knock guys in, but I do think his runs and RBIs will be high because of the ballpark and the fact that he will have guys on base in front of him.
See, I think that the drop in launch angle is actually going to be more beneficial for his BABIP in Colorado, given that large outfield, right? So I think in other ballparks, it would be a penalty, but I think there it's actually going to be an advantage. Where I think he's going to lose on the average, though, is that I do think he's going to, like I said, I don't think he's getting anywhere close to 550. I think he's going to share at bats between Fuentes and McMahon and maybe Welker. And you might even see some of the other first base prospects pushed by the end of the season too. And let's not forget, there's always that Greg Bird possibility.
Don't you dare, Greg Bird. So let me put a bow on the projection part for Cron. And the reason why I had specifically said, let's go with 550 at-bats. So the highest projection is 532 at-bats for him. And these are, we're talking like the Bat X, the Bat ATC, Fangraph, Steamer, Zips. Okay, everybody. This is everybody who has a reputation for projections. They are all giving him 475 or more, as high as 532. The max for home runs in a projection is 31. The max for runs is only 70. So I was off that. I probably should have put mine to 70 where you've got it. But the max for RBIs range from 74 to 89. That is lofty to go to 89 for a guy who hasn't sniffed it and the starting job thing. Now, everybody gives a stolen base as a projection, minimum one. That's just, you know, the randomness of it. And the average, which is the one that I think everybody's off on, his max average projection is 275. And the min that he's got is 262. Giving him a min that's only 5 points over his career average in that park is a mistake, and that's made by a couple of the preeminent projection systems. And that's one of the reasons why we often talk about ignoring those, but you can also reference them if you're not sure what to expect from a player. I look at career and situation. I don't look at 5 projection systems, but I do make my own projections, and I like to then go and look at these, which is why I always get to have a laugh at that expense. So anyway, that was a long, you know, whatever. We went long, and I apologize.
Yeah, I just think he's going to struggle given the fact that He's going to have inconsistent at bats. I think that's going to be the thing that you can't put into a projection system. So, but you know, we could spend all day on the Chronicles or the CJ Chronicles, I guess. Ooh,
maybe that's, it's going to be its own episode come May.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. But let's look at the pitching here, because I think this is the more telling thing for the success of the Rockies this season, and maybe more of a story of their failures over many years. But let's get into who we think is going to be the five guys here. The obvious couple here at the top, Germán Márquez, Kyle Freeland, John Gray. We're assuming Austin Gomber, the trade that the pitcher that came from St. Louis in the Arenado trade, and then Antonio Senzatella or whatever
it is. Senzatella.
Yeah.
Like Nutella.
Nutella. He's Venezuelan. Okay. That's, yeah. Anyway.
Hazelnuts come from, right?
No, I think that's where cryptocurrencies are happening.
Oh, maybe. Okay. So the easy way to talk about this lineup for me is Márquez is a good pitcher and he's in a crappy park, but he gets Ks. So you can get some Ks with him. You can get some quality starts, but it's all relative. If you're in a daily lineup, it's far better for you than if you are weekly. Kyle Freeland is the hidden quality start guy of this group. I've talked about it. I mean, I had written something on RobbieBaseball.com. Please check it out if you have not, under Robbie Writes, about Colorado sucking, and then about guys like Freeland who can kind of compete even though they're in the worst case scenario. John Gray previously was a high K guy with a reasonable ERA. That I certainly hope is not out the window, but he is such a flyer right now. And then Gomber, I think, like you said, I think they're just going to throw him in and see what we get out of him. If he can be between Márquez and Freeland, that would be a successful Colorado Rocky pitcher. And then Senzatella is like RP5, throw him to the wolves.
Well, and we're going to see somebody else in that group, because today the Rockies announced Freeland had a shoulder strain. He's going to be out a couple of weeks. So that's
all my Freeland shares.
Relatively hot off the press, which means they're currently searching to find any free agent that is willing to pitch in Colorado.
Pete Lambert was the guy they used last year, and he's hurt too. Oh, shoot.
Yeah, they don't have a whole lot of options, ladies and gentlemen. So that's definitely a concern. I mean, if you look to their depth, like you've got guys like Chichi Rodriguez in camp, that might be a serviceable option to go out there and plug some holes.
Derek Rodriguez, former San Francisco Giant rookie success.
Detroit Tiger.
Fell off a cliff. Derek Rodriguez was a Tiger. Oh, last year. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Nobody cared. So yeah, just thought I'd make that note. But yeah, after that, there's nothing else really going on.
They'll probably pick somebody up off waivers. That might be the thing, right?
And you've heard me talk about this guy all offseason who got put under the 40-man is Helchrys Olivares, is the only guy in their system that I'm relatively excited about.
Right.
I don't think they're going to push him. He's still just 20, 26, or 21 this season.
Maybe it's Riley Pint time. Maybe it's Riley Pint time, everybody.
I mean, why not? Like, yeah, I mean,
just throw him in. Watch him be lights out, too. Somehow his inability to hit a strike zone is okay in Colorado and it gets him back on.
Yeah. The thin air in Colorado just corrects all mechanical errors.
Why not? Why not? We were talking about knuckleballs maybe being a wave of the future for them there, but anyway. Okay. So it's not looking good in Colorado from the starting standpoint, as Ty said, with the news of Freeland, which you will all know by the time this comes out a little better than we do at this moment. The timeline might mean, yeah, they take somebody off waivers at the end of camp and throw them in. I'm trying to think off the top of my head where, like, Tommy Malone, I think he might be a Toronto guy. There will be non-roster invites to camp that their agents may be having conversations with teams like Colorado to say, hey, if he opts out, is this an option? And, you know, kind of being a little buzz in the ear for them. So let's
send them Legas back. Get him out of town.
He's off the 40 man now. So yeah. We talked about RPs with our episode in depth, but it's kind of, you know, Bard, Givens at the end. Oberg had a decent 19, I think, prior to health concerns. Robert Stevenson coming over in the trade from Cincinnati. Yancy Almonte, Carlos Estevez, and Jairo Diaz did have a brief period of time success with the Colorado closers, but it's always tough getting Colorado dudes. And then you got Rule 5, Jordan Sheffield. There isn't anyone to bank on here. And then Brendan Rodgers, who I did forget to mention just based on injury right now, I didn't have him as part of that potential depth in that infield in Colorado. But again, it looks like he might be waiting on a story type trade to get himself up and in. So we can go through these prospects pretty quick because there aren't a whole lot. But Drew Romo is somebody who was drafted this past year in the draft, a high school catching prospect. And that's all I really need to say about somebody like that. Connor Joe is another guy who could come up this year. Depth injury piece. He was rule 5 2 years ago, I think it was. I own him because of it. I looked into him, read a little bit about him, and I thought, oh, maybe, you know, maybe that's a guy. And I forget wherever it was he went. He was returned back to the Dodgers and then sort of disappeared. You've got the two first base prospects in Toglia and Grant Levine, first rounders in 18 and 19 back to back, who, again, we need to see some time. And what is it? Isaac Collins is kind of a long shot guy at second base if we're trying to find somebody to go there. And then, as Ty had already talked about, Colton Welker certainly seems like an ace in the hole. At some point, he should be deployed. And getting back down into shortstop.
Well, I know the only guy to mention at third base that we skipped over a little bit is Ehlers Montero, who came over from the Cardinals. Like, he's a guy to watch,
right?
Because like, what I need something from that trade. Like, I need to see something. Like,
and it's not going to be Gomber's stat line.
No, like I need to know why they did this. Like, I need to know why they paid $50 million for Arenado to play elsewhere. Yeah. Like, did they do something really bad and they were paying him to go away and cover it up? Like what is it that made that trade happen? It has to be somebody like Montero. Like, I need to see something. So I'm watching him just out of morbid curiosity.
Okay. Well, shortstops, there's five dudes. Ryan Vlade, whatever, who is in camp or was in camp, drafted second round in 17, 22-year-old. So he might be a quick mover. He might be somebody. Mateo Gil, who was part of that trade, also tie with St. Louis. Eddie Diaz. So these are three J2 guys here. Eddie Diaz.
Fast Eddie, just so you know. That's what they call him.
I'm interested.
He's a speed demon. He steals. He stole like 60 bases in 19.
Oh, okay. There we go. See, yes. Like I said, I'm interested. Adele Amador, another J2 guy. He's 17, though. And well, then Ezekiel Tovar.
The obvious is...
Hello.
For what?
It's me.
Adele Amador.
Oh, damn it. Sorry. I was like, what do you mean post-type? You can't go mixing up your
Adele. We just don't run into a lot of baseball players named Adele, so I had to run.
Right. Okay. Okay. That's fair. Obviously, we have the second coming of Jesus and Zach Veen, who is in their outfield for depth. And I mean, you know, go read my little thing on Colorado if you're worried or interested about Zach Veen. They also signed, and I don't see him here, they signed a J2 guy whose name is escaping me now. And this is the list that I made. So I'm a little annoyed at myself for not having put him on. It's not Boulevard, I think, but they had signed somebody in their outfield here who I really liked, and we'll circle back before we skip off. And yeah, like Ty had already mentioned, you know, the lack of depth with their pitching, and a big part of that extends right through to their minors. Chris McMahon, Helcris Oliveras, who Ty had mentioned, and McMahon was a second round pick last year, third round pick Sam Weatherly, who we had Reese White on with us, and Reese has essentially said, you know, he's a two pitch pitcher. And then Riley Pint is another guy. And other than that, it's rough. It is rough in Colorado. So
well, what did Ellen say? Tumbleweed town, right? I think that was the term that she used, or somebody used that recently.
Yeah, that's right. For the Philly episode.
I'm a fan of Tumbleweed town. And unfortunately they don't have anyone with great team photos so far in their list that I've looked at. This one's rough. Like, this is a very, very terrifying system. Like, there's a lot of question marks that need to be added here.
Outfielder Felix Tena, T-E-N-A or Tenya, 17-year-old power hitting outfielder in Colorado. So I'm going to give equal weight to both Tenya and Zach Veen being successful. So that was their J2 guy from this year, who's not yet listed on Fangraphs. So that means that even the guys who go looking will not find him, which is more reason for you to do it. And they did sign Brayon Volquez, which is the nephew of Edison Volquez. as well as a, so I mean, he's a pitcher, but he's got changeup, fastball. I know it's a Colorado guy. And then Darian Morion, who I believe is the brother of Adrian Morion, 17-year-old, and he's a strike thrower too. So if you're wanting one more guy that pitches for Colorado, because I know everybody does, it's Yordi Vargas, who's just listed. The scouting report I have him basically says he's got good commands, throws strikes. So
just a few episodes back, I took shit for talking about a left-handed reliever in the Washington system.
And I'm talking about Colorado J2s. Colorado J2 guys. Okay. All right. But anyway, let's leave them behind. Let's move to the 617 area code. Let's go talk about those darn Red Sox. Do you want to lead us off with that lineup?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen Kiki leading off a lot. I just don't see how that's reasonable. It's got to be Alex Verdugo.
Yeah.
Followed by Devers and then Bogarts and JD, right? Or JD Bogarts or Bogarts JD. Like that one's tricky. Cause you've got a series of things, but I think you're going to go probably Verdugo. You might go JD with the right-handed bat, but
it sets you up with a lot of righties, I guess, at that point.
The problem you have though is that if you mix this lineup up, like, it's tricky because if you go Bogarts 2, that means JD's 4. Are you okay with that? Right? Like, that's the question you have to ask yourself. So Bogarts 2 probably makes the most sense in behind there. And then you go Devers and JD, and you just maybe limit JD's at bats because he's getting old, and be okay with that. You focus on your young guys at the top and let that happen. So once you get through those guys, then you're probably going to see, I think, Kiki there at the beginning. I don't think he'll last there, but I do think he will start the season there. And I think that will be just the way they open the roster with Hunter Renfroe right behind it. And then I think you're going to see Christian Vasquez, but then you got Bobby Dalbec. That's the tricky one. Like, I don't know where to put Dalbec.
Right. I was just say, how many number nine hitters are first baseman, right? So it's a matter of boom or bust. And I think Dalbec might very well be 5, you know, if he's hitting, and if he starts to struggle, they'll just throw him back to 9, give him less at bats, but let him work himself through it. If the plan is to give him first base and let him go with it, like Michael Chavis is doing all he can, but I mean, whatever the scenario is, he's just not in the plans, it seems, to be a starter. He might not even end up on the team to start. There are not issues, but there are things happening that seem to favor Dalbec just being first baseman. And I mean, the power is real, you know, it's fun when these guys get to just like throw it out there. Like, yeah. I'm in favor of that. So,
well, and then you have Jarren Duran, who is a very real possibility to open as the starting center fielder.
That'd be like, really fun.
Yeah, it's a very real possibility. So if that happens, that makes Marwin go away, right? That moves one of your corner guys, whether it's Hunter or Verdugo, over to left, probably Renfroe, because he's the lesser of the two defensively. You got a big deep right field, so Verdugo probably makes more sense in right, even though Renfroe's a serviceable defender. I think Verdugo's got a little more speed. So I think that makes a little more sense. So this is a tricky lineup. Like, there's on one hand, it's hard to line up, but on the other hand, they have flexibility. So it's hard to pinpoint exactly what they're going to do, because like the lineup today was Kiki leading off, Duran, Renfroe, Devers, Marwin, Dalbec, right? So that's Chavis hit 8th, right? I think I would like to see Chavis start, because I think the poor guy just hasn't had consistent at bats. And I think that's part of why he's been struggling. But I'm with you though. I think for whatever reason, Boston isn't high on him and wants to move on. So I think he's going to find himself off the bench to start. And then, you know, Dalbec is the wild card for me, right? He had another home run today, 7th of the spring. There's an argument to be made that Rafael Devers, who has struggled this spring,
right, should lose at bats.
Yeah. And Dalbec should be the guy up there. So I'm confused by Dalbec. All right. Like, that's the guy that I think sets this lineup at the end of the day, depending.
And then
on
there is Franchi somewhere, right? Somewhere.
He's hurt though, right?
Yes. He COVID-19. Yeah. But that's the other one who as far as bench spots and things like that go. That's the other guy who can kind of muffle up. Now, what we're talking about are boom or bust or power or nothing guys. So it's not like, you know, like Yaro Muniz, who came up last year after like floating around, just like Christian Arroyo, you know, floating around. These are not the power guys, but they also came up and were serviceable players. So they might find themselves with at-bats this year too. Now, Munoz, I think, has already been, he was a non-roster guy. I think he's already been optioned. So I know he's no longer has a shot at opening day, but it doesn't mean he's not going to potentially be there as we go through the season. But it's just, yeah, it's interesting to see, you know, like a lot has to come together for Boston to be good 1 through 9, but they're dynamite off the top. Like, I mean, yeah, they're just, they're well, good.
Durant, the thing I like about Duran is that he's got the left-handed stick and this lineup desperately needs that, right? Because if not, you're going to run Marwin out there regularly just for the sake of having left-handed at bat in the lineup, right? Because after that, it's Devers and that's it. That's all they got. So I think you're going to see... Yeah, go ahead, Robbie.
Well, I was just, and that's without getting into the potential bench options. And as we've already, you know, just covered the bench options, although they've got like further down, Muniz, I believe, is a lefty, which is why I was mentioning. Oh no, he's not. But Franchi's a lefty. Mm-hmm. So there. Yeah, sorry. What I knew was that there was one potential guy, and then Danny Santana. Who, remember, once upon a time I talked about Danny Santana. I was like, he was interesting. Anyway, he's hurt. He's a switch hitting. Less likely guy to help out at some point this year. So yeah, it's not promising by any stretch. Like I'm down in their organizational depth, making sure we didn't miss anybody else still be in camp. There's a trade that I'll ask you about it in a second when we get to prospects.
Well, Christian Arroyo is a guy that's probably going to find himself on the bench somewhere to start. Might not last, but I think he will at the very least find his way into a bench role to start, because I don't imagine there's a scenario where Jeter Downs cracks the squad to start the year. There's just zero, like, as opposed to Colton Welker, there's zero reason to start his clock with the Red Sox. Same with Tristan Casas, who's probably a little further away. You have the guy with the best hair on the team and Arauz or whatever that guy's name is, with the dreadlocks, that plays like the middle infield when the game is over, basically. So there's weird depth here.
You know, if you want good hair, Ty, go back to the Phillies episode and
Mr. Hammer.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I've got it right here. Yeah, but
Senior Hammer.
Go back and check out Thor 2.0, the Clark Kent of Thor.
I think, you know, there's just, this lineup's gonna be good. Like offensively, they're gonna be just fine. There's a couple of roster spots to be assigned, but I think the thing that I just want to see where Delbec is, like, I think he has to hit 5 or better, in my opinion, to start. And if he loses that spot, cool. But I think that's the way he's got to start the season. If you believe in him, if you're the Red Sox, which looks like they might. So let's get into the pitching, where there's a lot more question marks and some interesting battles here. So, somehow default ace is Eduardo Rodriguez, which, if you think your team has scary opening day starter, then they raise you Eduardo Rodriguez,
who, you know, had COVID last year and had complications from it, and hopefully the health concerns are behind, but performance wise he has been hyped. And we say hype because it's not yet proven to be who he is, and this will be his age 28 season. This is a pretty big show me year for Nunez, who will, I believe, he's got 5 years of service.
Eduardo, you said Nunez.
So Eduardo Rodriguez is also about to be a pending free agent, so this is a show me year for him. So he's got 5 years of service time. So
I just, like, he's a fine pitcher, but he's not an opening day guy, right? Like, he's more of, I'm not trying to be hard on him because he doesn't have some value. I just, as an opening day starter, I'm not overly excited. And so I think it becomes really interesting to see what they're going to do moving forward. And it'd be interesting to see how he performs. Now, he's still only up to 2 innings in his last start, right? So there's some concerns over whether he's even ready at this point. So in that outing, he threw not a whole lot of pitches, I don't think. He only faced 11 hitters. And so that's not a guy that's ready to open the opening day for me. So that's my big concern. Beyond that, you've got Garrett Richards, who, although valuable, comes with risks of his own, right? He hasn't had a regular season in, what, 6 years, it seems like. So that's definitely questioning. And then the always injured Nathan Eovaldi comes after him. Martin Perez still has a job somehow. And then the fifth spot's kind of a crapshoot. Now, I think we'd both like to see Nick Pivetta. The stuff is good enough to be a starter. Location, not so much. And so it'll be interesting to see what they end up doing there. I don't know. Do you feel like that's the five guys, Robbie? Who do you see as an outside shot?
I don't see like an obvious guy, you know, Sales coming back from injury, and they don't have the non-roster guys to jump up and surprise. Like, this is the five. Like, this looks exactly like what we will see rolling through in April. And Martin Perez has had little bits and bobs of success, you know, 19, he had a little bit with the Twins. Eovaldi was going to be the closer, you know, then he's like an ace, and, you know, and Garrett Richards is Garrett Richards, you know, he's always hurt. And Nick Pivetta is just this wild card, but he's Canadian, so we love him. But he plays for the Red Sox, so we hate him. But he is still Canadian, so we love him at the end of the day. And that's what they are. It's a crappy thing. And when we talk prospects or talk further down the system, you'll see the depth's not there. So Red Sox are going to get a lot of bullpen innings this year. And interestingly, it's not going to be like that's where they're going to be okay. Like, there are also questions there. And we did talk about it with our RP episode, but, you know, it looks like it's Ottavino, Barnes, you know, Barnes, Ottavino, whoever it's going to be. Matt Andrees would be the other guy, Ty, who could sneak in as a starter. And if not, he might be the long reliever, you know, when one of these guys blows up every 5 days, Andrees goes in and puts up four innings of hopefully, you know, the fireman role. Darwin's and Hernandez has been an up and down guy, but he's still only 24. He's been up and down a lot, but he's only with injury, only has a year of service time. So, and then they've got the Japanese free agent, Hirokazu Suwamaru. I screwed it up. Sorry. But
Nailed
then they got,
it.
Yeah. Boom. Oh man. I didn't even increase the size for myself so I could see it better, but they've got rule five guy, Garrett Whitlock, who looks like he might stick around now. Philip Valdez, Austin Bryce, and Josh Taylor. It's guys, right? Like, Ryan Brazier's hurt. There's guys that could come in. Durbin Feltman's like somebody who, for some reason, from the moment he was drafted, is supposed to be the future closer there, but it's not great. There are other options we can get to, but they're taking a chance.
I think Whitlock's going to be a guy. I really do. I think he's been one of the better guys in camp. So I don't know what your justification is for rolling out guys that are getting ripped when you've got a rule five guy in camp that you need to keep on your lineup, right? He's pitched reasonably well. Like, his last outing, 3 innings, 5 strikeouts, he's pitched to a 1.0 so far in spring. Like, I think you got to give that guy a shot because the other guys just aren't really great alternatives. And so I think you have to look at it. I would like to see him open the camp, and maybe it gives you a little bit more time to roll out Eduardo, and maybe you go with a six man, right? With Boston to open the season, right? Yeah. Maybe that's how you do it, right? You roll out Eduardo on day one, and maybe you piggyback him with Whitlock. And then the second rotation through, you split him up to a six, right?
That would be interesting of a rule five pick just starting, like relatively from the beginning of the season. That would be single digit percentage, but that's cool.
That's just because we haven't seen starting pitchers taken in the rule five recently.
Right.
It's been focus on relief guys because they're the most likely to stick on the roster.
Right. So you can devote a space to them.
Yeah. This is the first time we've seen a guy with an actual shot at making camp. And as a starter, right? So he's certainly a better option than what we've seen from the rest of the guys. Like, Tanner Houck's going to be one of the other guys you need to think about, but he's going to start in AAA.
Yeah, and he's part of the depth. Let's go to them soon, but let's hit prospects because at catcher, which is like funny that we're talking about catchers, but Connor Wong was somebody that Ty had talked about in the offseason as a potential guy to come up with maybe the next class. Well, wouldn't you know it, last month, Ronaldo Hernandez was traded. This is the former future catcher for Tampa Bay who was traded now for Chris Mazza and Jeffrey Springs, a couple relief pitchers. And that was the trade that occurred. So Hernandez and Connor Wong might now find themselves in competition for each other for a backup role as the season rolls along. Then we can just go to first base where it's Tristan Casas' potential job to lose. I don't know what to say with Bobby Dahl back there, but whatever. Casas is really the only notable name. There were a few guys drafted in 10th round, 19th and 22nd. Stephen Scott, Dominic D'Alessandro and Joe Davies, but we didn't get to see what they could do. So we're going to need time to get a stat line for those guys to get a better scouting report on them. Second base, it's Gita Downs and Nick York, who, you know, I think everybody's now corrected on Nick York. He wasn't a throwaway pick. Boston was looking to get a guy to commit. They did, and it looks like it could be a success story for him. And then you go to second base where they've got Hudson Potts, Christian Cross, former Rocky prospect, and Blaze Jordan, the YouTube star, but he's also a baseball player. But let's all be easy people. He's an 18-year-old guy who was drafted in the third round this year, and his hype train went up immediately because people knew who he was. So when we get further back, you've got at third base, shortstop third base, Nick Sogard, who was part of that Ronaldo Hernandez deal, and him coming from Tampa makes me think he's going to be terrible. Just because that's what Tampa Bay does, right? They take your talent. They don't give it to you, but I'm going to put a little note on him. We're going to watch him. And then Ty mentioned Jaren Duran as a potential guy who could start in the outfield with Boston. And we discussed kind of the other dudes there, but it is thinner in that outfield. You don't have the upper echelon of your, you know, like you don't have graduating classes coming up to the top here in 19. You've got Durant, who was in the seventh round in 18, and that's kind of it at the high level. So we get into pitching. Ty would just mention Tanner Houck, 24-year-old who got a cup of coffee last year, come back. There's also the possibility that Steven Gonsalves, who has a tiny bit of MLB time, that he might get some time this year. I don't know. It's nothing that I'm like crossing my fingers, hoping it's going to happen. Brian Matta injured, poor guy. And that's going to put a little delay on his potential timeline. Thad Ward, who is in camp, who was drafted in 18. He's somebody to know because he's been in camp. Jay Groom, who we're waiting to see, the 2016 first round pick, and Noah Song, who was drafted in the fourth round in 19, and I believe has a 2-year Air Force commitment that could be up this summer. I believe that's right. And in every draft this offseason, Ty, where he wasn't already taken, he was inside the top 100. So people are believing that there's something here. And then there was a fifth round pick from this last year's draft, Shane Drohan, D-R-O-H-A-N, a lefty, 22-year-old college guy. I'm just interested in him. So I gave him a little asterisk. I don't know that I missed anybody that was obvious. This is not a good system, and it's not a good system because they emptied it out to win a World Series. So did I miss anybody? I did mention Durbin Feltman, Ty, but feel like that was kind of...
like the only guy that is of any interest, and the only reason I put it is, you know, this is a team that has a history of hitting home runs in the international market. So anytime they sign somebody in the international market, I'm usually earmarking those guys. So if you look at like Eduardo Lopez, Brian Gonzalez, Miguel Blaise whatever. Those are the guys I'm looking at in this system that are a little further away. You know, it's usually their shortstop guys, like they're high level talent positions that usually are worth noting. So those are the guys that I'm looking at. But beyond that, like, I'm not interested in too many other guys that you didn't mention.
Okay. And Boston is certainly a team where, because of the availability for players to seize prospect status, like, you know, viable fantasy prospect status, things could very well change as the season goes on. whether that's like guys getting assigned to the alt site that we didn't think would be alt site guys, or they go to AA, AAA, get an aggressive assignment because the team has now seen them do something for over a year. So they're going to give them that aggressive assignment. Like this list could shuffle drastically, but as we've also seen, it, you know, you could have more injuries and then it could be further eroded than it appears to be today. And I mean, that obviously opens the door for other guys to come in if the organization's not going to go the veteran route, which I think we can agree that time for the Red Sox is now in the past. They're going to look to develop from within with what they've got and then start to bring that stuff up, which is going to take years. You know, it's going to take years for them to do it.
Yeah, and the only other guy that it's worth paying attention to that I'm just skimming in recalling, and I think he's got a long way to go, is Matt Lugo, who's a second-round pick in 19. He's a speed guy, a little bit of pop. So, like, if for whatever reason his hit tool develops in a way that's different, I could see him being an interesting product. So, well, that's the only other guy I wanted to finish off on. He plays the shortstop position, which, as I mentioned, traditionally is a powerhouse position for the Red Sox. So they do have a long storied history of getting those guys right.
So to add to that then, Ty, there are two J2 guys that I was able to get some video on. Luis Ravello, 17-year-old, and Miguel Bleis, B-L-E-I-S, both 17-year-old outfielders. Ravello is an elite defender and very much like Cruz, who was also in the J2 draft, and Eric Pena, from Kansas City, whereas Bleis is a power back corner outfield potential.
Bleis is the guy I was trying to pronounce earlier. I agree. He's a guy that I have eyes on as well. So that's probably the most notable J2 guy that I'm watching in their system. So just as a good way to bring it all home. Robbie and I agree, which is a rare moment in time.
We better end this podcast.
Yeah.
So, and I don't mean the episode. I mean the whole damn thing.
So if you look over beside you, you see the cat walk past the door twice. The system has glitched and the Matrix is a thing. So that's a great spot to leave it. This has been Boston, Colorado's dumpster fire minor league episode. We can't wait for the season to start, but until next time, it's been Rob and Tyler on Dingers.
This is Dingers, way more than fantasy baseball. We keep it real when we talk and knock it straight out the park. Let's see the stats, what's the average draft position? What kind of plays you making? Check the wins above replacement. Check the lineups and the points, this I gotta see. What's your path to victory? Are they aiming for a dynasty? Get points going head to head, please don't do me no favors. We're always watching waivers, ain't no minor league, this is major. Yeah, Dingers, let's go.